Hello and welcome to Diversity in Research. My name is Lachlan Smith.
And I'm Jakob Filfers Christensen.
Today we have a fellow podcaster joining us. So today we're joined by Sarah McCluskey, who is based here in the UK, where I am, and she is a freelance consultant who works in all research culture, research management, research impact, all those kinds of spaces here in the UK. And she actually runs her own podcast called the Research Adjacent Podcast. And in the chat today, we talk a little bit about what research adjacent means from her perspective and how that interrelates with the work that we do around equality, diversity and inclusion in research, and particularly within an international research context. So enjoy our chat with Sarah, and we'll be back afterwards with some reflections. Sarah, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for inviting me. Lovely to meet you.
It's great to have you here. And just before we kick off and get into the heart of the conversation, I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about yourself, your own podcast, and what it means to be research adjacent.
Yeah, sure. So I am, describe myself as research adjacent, which I didn't invent the term. I saw other people using it on Twitter before myself. But right. When I became freelance, which was just over 2 years ago now, I needed some way to describe what I do. So the term research adjacent just seemed to work quite nicely because I do a variety of different things that help to support the research environment. So I'm a consultant. I do a lot of research communications work. I do training. I do facilitation. I help people organize workshops and all sorts of stuff like that, organizing events and things. So I do a huge range of things, which is why research adjacent seemed to work for me rather than pinning me down for one particular thing. And that also led to me starting a podcast called Research Adjacent, which people listening to this obviously like podcasts. So if you want to find it, if you just go to any podcast place and search for Research Adjacent, then you will find it. And what I do in the podcast is I interview people who do all kinds of different and interesting jobs in the research environment, but who are not fundamentally researchers. And that is because I think, and I'm sure these will be some of the things that we'll get into in this conversation, that researchers get all the glory when research adjacents are doing an awful lot of the work. And so it was my little thing that within my area of influence that I felt I could do to help to raise the profile of some of the amazing work that these people are doing.
It's a fantastic little explanation. I must admit, before I came across your podcast, I hadn't heard of the term research adjacent, but then it sounds like a really nice, or potentially a really nice term to encapsulate, you know, a whole raft of people who, as you say, support researchers in their day-to-day work. And it sounds like they can cover a range of people working from inside institutions and inside academic departments right through to people like yourself. And you've kind of touched on it a little bit, but I wonder if you could just say anything more about, you know, what are the kinds of roles that research adjacent people play in research? And but perhaps more interestingly, why are their roles just so important?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I tend to think of research adjacent roles as fitting into one of two categories. So the two categories for me are either roles which are fundamental in helping the research to actually happen. So that means people who are things like project managers, people who work in publishing, people who work in the research office, who deal with the finance side of research, people who help with funding applications. Even you could extend it to, I think often people think of technicians separately, but, you know, even things like people who work in libraries, people who do training and professional development for researchers. So all roles which are involved in actually helping the research to happen. Then on the other side is people whose roles are about getting the research out into the world. So that includes things like knowledge exchange, public engagement, impact, research communications, those sorts of external facing roles that help the academics, help the research happen in partnership with other people. And I like to really think of research as something which is done by a team, and the researchers are part of that team, but all these other people are part of that team as well. And we have a culture at the moment in academia where all that we focus on and celebrate is the academic outputs. And that means, you know, the papers or the conference presentations or things like that. Whereas these roles are often the glue that holds that stuff together. And you know you've got a problem when the glue's not there and everything falls apart. But because they're those in-between bits, they're sometimes just not seen. It's invisible. Sometimes as well, a lot of these roles, it's often quite hard to actually explain what they do, because a lot of the work is relational, or it's involved in coordinating things, bringing things together, helping people to work together, which can be incredibly time consuming, but often there isn't a lot to show for that work. And as I say, it's often only when it's not working that you start to realize how important that role was in making the research happen.
Yes, completely. I mean, I think you're absolutely spot on that a lot of these roles have been invisible for a long time, and perhaps they're becoming a little bit more visible now. And I think your podcast is probably part of that process, to be honest, and in helping to make that happen. But one of the real pushes, certainly through IAMA and other research management organizations, is to try and professionalize these types of roles, and to give them recognition, and, you know, to, I guess, as you say, really highlight the role that they play in terms of the glue of holding the system together, because there's huge expectations on academic researchers, whether they're here in the UK, in Denmark, or elsewhere in the world, and having those support structures behind them is absolutely critical. And I think one of the other really interesting things is that these roles can sit almost anywhere, and the sort of variety of roles is extremely extensive, which actually makes identifying a coherent set of skills or values or experience quite challenging, when you can have freelance people like yourself who come in and work with universities. You can have people in libraries, you can have people in research support offices within universities, you can have people in departments, you can have people working as part of a research project, and the list is kind of endless. So it's really fascinating. But one of the things that we've noticed, and I know you've noticed as well, is that a lot of the research adjacent people tend to be women. And I don't think that's exclusively a UK thing. I think, you know, evidence would suggest that that's the same in Europe. It's the same in the United States. It's the same in South America. It's the same in other parts of the world. And it'd be interesting to get your reflections on that, particularly as we start to explore issues of diversity. Why do you think there are so many women, and what does that mean for research and research environments?
Yeah,
thing that if you look towards the US, you will also notice that not only are they women, they're also black women, whereas the academics are more white. So there's an extra dimension to it when it comes to the US as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think certainly I did go and try and look up some statistics for this just before coming on. And it seems that the evidence I could find, again, partly when you're saying about how these roles are not very well defined, it is sometimes hard to find data on it because nobody is collecting this stuff together. But it seems to vary from the estimate seems to be around about 83 to 85%. I got numbers there, but even as much as 93% female. In one survey that I found. So yes, I think there is no question whatsoever that it is predominantly female. I think we don't talk about it enough, actually. We talk an awful lot about gender split and things like that within the researchers side of academia. I don't think we talk enough about it in these research and academic adjacent roles. And I have many theories. I have no evidence to back up any of them, because again, I don't think anybody's doing this research, and I think somebody should be doing this research. One of my theories relates to what's often talked about as kind of workplace housekeeping. And there was a study just this week, I think it was done in Denmark, actually, that a lot of people have shared on LinkedIn, which showed that it was done amongst academics, but that 75% of the kind of service work in academia was being done by women and only 25% by men. And the men that were interviewed actually admitted to being deliberately evasive or feigning being disorganized to get out of doing this work. So it's really seen as kind of low status work. And there is the fact that it's also seen as this kind of, as I say, a bit like housekeeping in the home. It's you know, it's the emotional labor. It's the stuff that has to get done in order to keep things running smoothly, but that men often, you know, don't want to do. So if somebody's got to do it, then it tends to be women that pick it up. And I think a lot of the research adjacent roles often fall into that category when it's the sort of management and administration type roles. It's making sure that everything's in order and that everything keeps running. Some of it is the kind of nurturing type roles as well. I think a lot of women, again, were socialized towards roles which are about things like partnership working or public engagement, or, you know, this sort of where it's very relational. And I think that that because of the way that women are socialized, that they're perhaps drawn to those kinds of works or that kind of work, or given the impression that that's a good fit for their skills. And I do think I don't want to give the impression that I think women are not doing a great job of these. I think I know women who are doing a fantastic work in these areas, but that's not to say that I don't think men can do it as well. I think another thing as well, which gets talked a lot about, is this kind of leaky pipeline of academics and the idea that women are dropping out of the academic workforce at a higher rate than men. Not anybody seems to be talking about where those women go. I could tell you where a lot of those women go. A lot of those women go into research adjacent roles, and a huge number of the people that I interview for the podcast are really well qualified. You know, they've got PhDs, they might have done postdocs, myself included, I've got a PhD. They might have done postdocs and for what, but they are the leaky pipeline. So they've looked around and they've said, what other roles are there that I can do, where my research background is an asset, where it's something that I understand. And these roles provide great opportunities for them to stay within the university system. But as I say, again, perhaps not getting the credit that's due for the level of work that they're doing. And then I also think as well, there's a lot of women that I speak to in the research adjacent role who have followed a partner who was an academic. So perhaps they met and they, you know, and it was for whatever reason, the male partner is the one whose academic career takes off. The female partner in that dynamic, or it might be two female partners, you know, whatever, but the female partner who ends up in the research adjacent world has followed a partner who is an academic and finds themselves in a university town looking for a job. And there are jobs which are potentially a good match for their skills. And that seems to come up a lot as well. So those are some of my theories. I don't have an awful lot of evidence to support any of them. But I think that's some of the reasons why there's so many women in this area.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, some of the stuff you've said really echoes with some of the, even just the guests we've had on our podcast. I mean, there's certainly been some who were female academics or at least got their PhD. Some of them then went on to work in academia and then moved out of academia into what would be essentially research adjacent roles. And I remember in the universities that I've worked in as well, where again, they were predominantly female, in some of the research support roles. Again, I can think of examples of people who had PhDs or had gone through masters in research and things like that, and then moved into those types of roles. So I think there might be something in that. As you say, some research could be quite interesting in that area. The other bit I just want to pick up on was the question of emotional labor. Mm. And I think there's something in the fact that for a lot of the roles, they are quite relational, aren't they? There's a lot of relationship building stuff, and this will come to potentially, you know, questions of how you build partnerships and what international partnerships might look like, or even just partnerships between universities in the same country. But there's a lot of relational work there and labor that goes into that. And I know there's research has been done, hasn't there, on the academic side, that the academics who pick up the emotional labor roles in terms of supporting students with individual tutoring or mental health problems tends to fall predominantly on female academics. So it did make me think, as you were saying that, there probably is some truth in that. Probably somebody needs to look into it, but I think there's definitely some truth in that. But then I guess the next question might be, I wonder what this all means then for academic research development. Is there something about the fact that it is predominantly women? And if it is 80%, which it wouldn't surprise me if it was somewhere in that region, what might that mean for, you know, inclusion, diversity, research, partnership building? And did you have any thoughts on that?
I think it's great that these roles exist and that people are finding them as an opportunity to stay in the research world if that's what they choose to do, because you know, there aren't enough jobs in academia for everybody. I think it's really important we don't present these jobs as a kind of failure, that, you know, people have, in many cases, it's a very positive choice to go in this direction. But I think, so I understand why women have followed that path. But I think, like any argument for diversity, if you have more diverse voices, then you have a broader picture of what the needs of a community. There's more different ideas coming in. There's more just all those different perspectives and the difference that makes, and a more kind of balanced workplace. I think that so I think for that reason, that's why that potentially being so female dominated is a problem, just as having a very male dominated culture can be a problem as well. I think that a lot of the work around changes in research culture is being driven by these women who find themselves now in some very senior roles, you know, directors of research offices, strategic leadership roles within institutes and things like that. And they're actually in positions to drive change within their organizations. And I think certainly are trying to do that, and perhaps trying to reduce some of the more negative and perhaps at times seen as masculine, but the kind of hyper-competitiveness and the really stressful environment there is in some research workplaces, and trying to change that. And perhaps that, shall we say, feminine influence isn't a bad thing in that context. I think also, I've gone slight blank on the second part of your question.
That's fine. Don't worry.
I can edit that bit out. I think was it about the influence that these roles can have?
Yeah. And I guess that would be quite interesting to understand. Like one of the things I remember when I first got involved in what was probably a research adjacent post, so going back probably 12, 13 years ago, is I don't think I felt like I had a lot of influence really over who got engaged in the research and how impact happened. It felt very kind of process driven, I guess. You know, you were expected to do certain tasks in order to support the academic. And I wondered a bit if that had changed now. And do you think research adjacent people have more influence? And what is that influence? And is that influence easier if you're a research manager within an institution, or perhaps somebody like yourself from the outside who might be able to influence and work with academics?
Yeah, I certainly feel that as somebody, I'll answer the second part first of all. As somebody on the outside, I'm quite enjoying problematizing things, but not having to come up with the solutions. that's quite nice. Just go,
don't give away our secrets.
Yeah. I don't have to fix it. So from the outside, but that's great. But also, I'm not in a position, so I can say things, and that's one of the reasons I started the podcast. I feel like I can say things, and I'm not going to lose my job if I you know, put my hand up and say something. But when it comes to influence, I actually do think research adjacent people have got a lot of influence. They, in some cases, it's quite overt influence. So in the last role that I was in a university, I was manager of a research institute. And what that actually meant wasn't just the operational day-to-day, but when there were discussions being had about which funding we were going to apply for or what appointments we were going to make, I was in that room with the directors. So there were four senior academics and me making the decisions about the direction of that research institute. So I did have a lot of influence in that position. And certainly there is a group of research managers who are calling themselves PRISM, P-R-I-S-M, and I can't remember what it stands for, as research managers who are in these very strategic positions and actually do have a lot of influence. So there is that. There are some people in research adjacent positions that are quite senior, but also even the ones that I'm a great believer in, that you take responsibility for the situation that you find yourself in. And for example, people who are doing work in public engagement, which I know is a much bigger thing in the UK than it is in some other countries. But in public engagement, either explicitly or not, decisions are being made about who the public is that you work with. And so there are opportunities to say, well, I think we should be working with this community rather than this community. We need to get some more diverse voices in. So I'm going to go out there, I'm going to make the effort to form a partnership with this community organization, this kind of underserved area, or I'm going to make, you know, I can see the people that we've got as part of this cohort, and they're all, you know, they're a certain type. We need to go and find somebody, some people to fill the gaps. So I think certainly there's the opportunity to have influence there. I also think as well, and I'm sure this again comes up with both of you a lot in the work that you do, there's so many policies and things out there around diversity inclusion that are not necessarily being implemented. So they're not necessarily making the difference.
I think most of those policies live a happy life in a drawer somewhere.
That's exactly. But it's partly because the people, we're expecting academics to implement them. They're not going to implement them. The people who are implementing them are the research adjacent people. They're the people who are, you know, they're maybe doing the communication for the department. So you decide whose picture goes on the web page. We have a huge amount of influence if we actually think about what we can do within our own sphere of influence and not necessarily waiting. I'm, again, it's probably why I'm freelance. I've never been the kind of person who waits for somebody to tell me to do something if I think it's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to do it, you know.
Yeah, I think that goes well.
Yes. And I think, one of the points you raised is one of the things that I think we try and talk to research managers, research support kind of staff about when we work with them, which is we are in a position to both take those policies, take that funding guidance, whatever it might be, and influence the academic, partly because if we do it and we do it well, it'll enhance the academic's chances of getting funded. So there is that brutal reality, and academics like to get funded, you know, they want to go through this process to do that. But also we can be a critical friend in a sense and challenge the academic or the partnership, as you were saying, like, have we got the right people around the table here to, you know, we might be doing research for or about community X, but is community X actually represented around this table as part of that research? And I think that's potentially one of the most beneficial parts of having, you know, good research adjacent staff involved in projects. And I think, and I hope, although sometimes we wonder, I think it's fair to say, don't we, Jacob? I think academics generally are getting more on board with that now. You know, you still meet pockets of resistance, but generally speaking, they can see the value in working with research adjacent staff. So that's really positive. One of the things we're particularly interested in, other than just diversity in a research context itself, is kind of how diversity works in an international context, when you've got different cultures coming together, you've got different institutions from different countries coming together to work on a whole range of different research projects. And we think there's probably quite a critical role there for research adjacent people as well, whether they be in the UK or beyond. And I just wondered if you had any sort of reflections on that, to, you know, what role can research adjacent staff play in, you know, helping to shape international partnerships or to take account of cultural differences and ensure equitable partnerships, which is something which comes up more and more these days, particularly with Global North and Global South partnerships.
Yeah, absolutely. I think again, research adjacent staff have got a huge amount to offer here. Certainly when it comes from my own experience, I haven't done a huge amount of international collaboration, but what I have done a lot of is collaboration with thinking in the context of public engagement, and you might want to work with a community of experts, what I would call experts by experience, people who have perhaps got lived experience of a particular thing, and where there is inevitably a power dynamic between the people with the lived experience that you want to work with and the, you know, all powerful academics coming in from the university, from their ivory tower. And so it's that idea there of overcoming, because there can be cultural differences just within a country, not just within different countries, you know. So each of those groups are coming in with their cultures and having to overcome those barriers. I think the main things that I have seen that make a difference is time. It always takes a lot more time than you think it does. And it takes time for relationships to develop and for people to get to know each other, because it's when you get to know somebody as a human being, that's when you start to really break down those barriers. I think great facilitation can make a huge difference as well. So that's helping, rather than having, say, the academic lead a conversation, then you either you have an independent person to lead that conversation, make sure people get equal opportunities, or even you flip it and you allow the experts by experience to lead the conversation. And I think that can be really relevant. There's some things that I know that there's a shift towards with international collaborations. For example, if you've got one very well-resourced country and another much less resourced country, is what can you do to transfer resources and power into that less well-resourced country? And how can you train people there to be the researchers? How can you provide them with the equipment? And the same sort of thing is starting to happen with public engagement kind of collaborations, where you have, you know, how can we train people as peer researchers and things like that, rather than the academics coming in and just, you know, saying we know best, and how can we listen? And listening is always the most important and often underrated thing, I find.
Completely. And having a absolutely listening, but having a research adjacent staff as the facilitator or the mediator or a more independent voice almost can be quite effective. And I think we've found that in some of the work we've done, where we've been able to go in and challenge some assumptions and challenge some thinking and just get the academic partners to think about questions that maybe they hadn't thought about before, and help them construct new ways of working together or with communities that they might be working with. So that absolutely makes sense. And I think it does apply, those same skills apply, whether it's within an international context or within the UK or Denmark or wherever it might be.
And I was just saying, I think sometimes what you can do as outsiders, we would often be, is that you can sometimes also take the pressure off the people with the lived experience, because it can also sometimes be a lot of pressure for them to represent a whole group or suddenly be so much in focus and feeling like they should carry the burden of a group or speak on behalf of someone. And so sometimes that can be a thing as well. And I think it also speaks a bit back to when you talked about earlier, in the role of research adjacent employees at research institutions or freelancers like ourselves, is that you can give, you can bring the, or you could be the person who brings skills, diversity skills, or literacy, as we often talk about diversity literacy, that because you can't have everybody in the room, you can't have every, you can't have someone with a lived experience from every group or every country or every culture. So sometimes it's bringing that skill to it sometimes as well. That could be as in a facilitating role as well.
Yeah, I like that. I like the idea of bringing diversity skills. Yeah,
definitely. Now, we normally finish with a question about our listeners as research managers and administrators, but we've learned a new term today about research adjacents. So we're going to frame the question as those who are research adjacent. So many of our listeners are research adjacent. And we thought we'd just ask a final question about, do you have any tips to help them, you know, work with researchers and academics to make diversity work, either in a local or an international context? Any final thoughts or reflections?
First thing just to say is that with the term research adjacent, I will just say that, like, people use it if you like it. If you don't like it, it's fine. Like, you know, I know some people don't love it, which is absolutely fine. I'm not super attached to it. I think the most important thing for me is that we have the conversation. In terms of final tips, well, I think what I just said in that last one, I think there's listening is always really important, and doing your best to understand everybody and where they're coming from and the pressures that they're under. And I think that goes a long way to bridging gaps. And then also, I think, as I said earlier, doing what you can within your sphere of influence and not being afraid to do that and not being... you know, you don't have to rewrite the world, but what you can do is maybe say, you know, oh, there's things, little things I've done in places we work that just make such a big difference to people. You know, if you're involved in recruitment and you think, right, our recruitment processes are not very fair for this category of people, well, maybe you can make a little tweak. Like, we made a little tweak and we sent people a kind of information pack in advance, which gave them lots of stuff around, you know, how to get to the interview. And people afterwards who said that just made such a huge difference, made them feel so much more welcome and so much more kind of relaxed and comfortable coming into that interview. So sometimes little things make people feel so much more welcome and so much more able to be part of that conversation. And that's what we need in order to improve diversity, is for everybody to feel like they're welcome and that their contribution matters, and that people, you can do that at whatever role you're at.
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody can be involved in that, for sure. Thank you very much, Sarah, for your time. Just a reminder to everybody, do check out Sarah's podcast, the Research Adjacent podcast. It's well worth a listen, and you might find that we've got one or two overlap guests. I think I've spotted one or two that Sarah's spoken to, that we've spoken to as well. So yeah. Sarah's obviously a very good judge of character when it comes to, to guests on her podcast. But thank you so much for your time. Really enjoyed the conversation.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me on. And yes, always open to suggestions for new guests as well. So if anybody has any ideas, then feel free to get in touch. Thank you.
So that was our chat with Sarah. Jakob, any initial thoughts and takeaways from that conversation?
Yeah, so I think it's, and not that it's any surprise as such to us, that, but the diversity of research adjacent roles is, of course, always fascinating for us to talk about. So I think that's always interesting, and it just shows how many ways that you could potentially influence EDI in research or research management or research adjacent jobs, depending on what you call it. So I think that part was, of course, interesting. But particularly, I think, when we talked about how that research managers could influence this, how there is a potential, I liked how she talked about there being a potential role to play. And I think the important word there is potential. and how much is actually up to research managers or research adjacent, the research adjacent people out there to take responsibility. Because it's not like people are competing about doing this work, but there is some really important work that is about better research, and there's some there is a support role there. But you need to take responsibility. You need to show some courage and go in and say, "We actually need to do this work, and let me help you do this." And I of course think that is a fascinating to think about how what it could be done. It's no secret that we would like to support people in doing that, but just that even if they did it on their own, I think there's just so many interesting things that we could do and to make research better. And then, of course, acknowledging that these are skills, and it's not just soft skills. These are actual real skills that you have to cultivate. It's not just a question of being friendly to people. Yeah. But I think those were from my chair. That was the most interesting parts of the conversation, I think.
Yeah, I think there's something around the diversity of roles, as you say. But what Sarah really highlighted for me was that every single one of those roles, be they research managers, be they research administrators, or in other research adjacent type roles, has the opportunity to influence EDI and research cultures and making sure that, you know, whether you're working internally within a country, within an institution, or with international collaborators, that the environments are inclusive and these research adjacent roles are critical in that. So it kind of was nice in a way, as you sort of say, to have that reinforced, like there is a role here. These roles are important in just making research happen, but they're also important to ensure that research environments and the research is inclusive as well. So, but it highlighted as well, as you say, that, you know, people do need to step up to this. You know, there's a bit of a challenge for research adjacent posts here. It's very easy in this space to be passive and see it as not your job kind of thing. But actually research adjacent roles are in really strong positions and it'd be great to get more people in research adjacent roles engaged in equality, diversity and inclusion initiatives and thinking and, you know, being change makers in their institution.
Yeah, and then I think, and this is of course pure speculation, but as we talked about before, it was also interesting the talk we had about how many research adjacent people are women, and we know that from when we worked as research managers and when we run workshops, mainly women show up, and I think it's interesting, and this is of course again purely speculation, how much of that does influence how we think about working with diversity in research. Because you talked about the nurturing role, the caring role, and are those dimension and the culture around that, because there are so many women working in this field, how does that define how we look at diversity? And how it's considered a soft skill and things like that, which it to some extent, of course, is. But I think it would be interesting to see how that influences the thoughts about this and how we think it is or isn't necessary to deal with these topics.
Yeah, it was an interesting discussion, wasn't it? And as you said, you know, Sarah didn't have all the answers. I don't think anybody has all the answers as to why there are so many more women in these roles. But it is an observation that it is generally, not exclusively, but generally it is the women in these organizations, be they researchers, be they research managers, or in other research-adjacent roles, who are stepping up and wanting to be part of this conversation. And some of that might be driven through some self-interest, you know, it could possibly, but that doesn't explain it all.
Yeah, sure.
And I think it does shape the way institutions and the sector thinks about it. Hopefully that will continue to evolve and change over time, but it's curious, and I don't think we know all the answers yet, and maybe we'll never know all the answers, but I hope we can get more cisgendered straight men into these conversations and not be afraid to be in these conversations as well.
Yeah, because the moment we talk about, let's say, if we go into a discussion about AI and the use of AI, because there are tremendous consequences for EDR and diversity when we're talking about AI in so many ways.
Yeah.
You'll have plenty of men talking about AI, and but not necessarily about diversity, even if I think the link is so strong. If you look at discussions about spies in research, so much of that is about culture as well, because when you are we meeting people, people from different contexts, how do we think about them? How do we interact with people? How do we think about international collaborators? The moment we're talking about spy and stealing secrets, you'll have plenty of men in the field. The moment it's about hosting yes. people and doing stuff, women show up. What is it about this that why is that? Because there's so many connections to all these things, and men are always there in the periphery of these discussions about EDI or where there is a clear link, but the link to EDI is never made by most of these men, at least. I'm not going to say all the men, but a lot of them. I think it's absolutely fascinating how we don't see the link.
No, we don't.
Because we've probably brainwashed each other to see EDI everywhere. That's probably it.
Well, perhaps, but I fear now that as Sarah wants to have us on her podcast, you've just given her a couple of questions that she might pose to us. So we're going to have to ponder a little bit more.
She listens to this part of it as well. And then...
yes. but good questions, well, and we don't have the answers.
Yeah, exactly. No. Thank you to Sarah for joining us here today. And we recommend that people listen to her podcast. They will see a couple of, recognize a couple of guests on her podcast from ours. And so give it a listen and a good review so that more people can learn about her podcast as well. I'll just read us out here. So, the Diversity in Research podcast is a Diversity Unity production. It's produced and edited by Peter Siong. It's hosted by Lachlan Smith and myself, Jakob Feldfors Christensen. You can follow us on Twitter at DiversPod. That's DIVRESPOD. Remember to subscribe, like, and review wherever you listen to podcasts and share it with colleagues and friends. To learn more about our consultancy and workshops, visit www.diversityunity.com. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions for topics or guests to cover on the podcast, don't hesitate to contact us. So that was all for today. See you again in a couple of weeks or so.